Welcome back to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's Q&A with Layla, and we're continuing with questions. So what do we have this for this portion of Intelligent Medicine?
We have a question from Anna. She asks, I would really be interested to hear something about copper overload in the body. I did a hair mineral analysis, which showed that I was high in copper in the tissue. What can someone do about that?
Well, no good, because a hair analysis is not going to be very helpful in terms of revealing a copper imbalance in your body, because there's a lot of copper in certain hair products. There's a lot of copper in water supplies. Sometimes people have copper pipes. And what's on your hair and what's in a hair analysis doesn't necessarily reflect the balance in your cells in your body. So I wouldn't proceed from that assumption that you are copper overloaded, but let's assume that that is correct. Copper is most often evaluated in terms of its ratio to zinc, the so-called copper-zinc ratio.
Yeah,
and that's because copper and zinc are sort of like magnesium and calcium. They complement one another, but they also, to some extent, antagonize one another. There's a disease of copper overload, which is called Wilson's syndrome. And the way to treat it is to give a lot of zinc. Zinc will push out the excess copper. And that's one of the reasons why if you're taking a lot of zinc, you need to take a little copper, maybe in a, you know, like a 8-to-1 or 5-to-1 ratio.
People now during cold and flu season who are doubling up on their zinc and taking it all winter long, they do need to balance it with, say, 2 to 3 milligrams of copper.
Right.
Or so, at least, you know.
Right. She's actually, of course, she's talking about a copper overload.
Copper
and there's
overload.
There's actually one of our really terrific predecessors here in the Northeast, Dr. Carl Pfeiffer, who ran the Princeton Bio Brain Center for many years in the 1960s and 70s, believed that copper overload was a big problem. And it was to some extent because of copper pipes. Now we've replaced copper pipes with PVC pipes, which have their own problems because they're plastics.
Yeah.
But we're seeing a little less in the way of copper overload. He linked copper overload to behavioral problems and mental illnesses. Mm-hmm. And he was a big proponent of using zinc to counteract that.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
there's also a wonderful book I read many years ago from Anne Louise Gittleman.
Right.
A book called Why Am I Always So Tired? And she talked about copper overload.
Right.
And many of the symptoms and taking zinc and so forth. So it's very interesting.
So how to properly evaluate that? You can look at zinc levels and copper levels in your blood. However, that isn't necessarily deadly accurate either.
So it could be, here are some of the possible, I've got a list here of the possible symptoms of copper overload.
Oh, great, okay.
Yeah, and this is actually from Anne Louise Gittleman's blog, and she's wonderful. She's like a superhero nutritionist.
Sure.
She asks, do you eat light, frequent meals, but you still lack energy? Does your mind tend to race even when your body is exhausted? That's kind of like being wired but tired. Do you consider yourself a highly creative person, but one who's frequently anxious and drained of energy? You know, things like this, do you tend to daydream and live in your head? Do you experience a lot of insomnia?
So far, all of the above. No, I don't have insomnia. No, I was thinking I might be copper overload. Because I mean, ever since medical school, you know, they would like parade all these diseases in front of us, and I would say, hey, you know, maybe I have that.
Me.
That's, you know, especially when they did psychiatry. I mean, that was like, I had virtually every syndrome there. So, okay, well, unfortunately, these are symptoms that can be due to a lot of things that are rather vague.
That's true.
So, you know, lest we lead people to believe that every time they're anxious or daydreaming or, you know, have insomnia that it's due to copper. That might be part of the equation. Let's put it that
only
way.
Only because copper is a brain stimulant.
Yeah, and where do we get copper dietarily? Because that's you write up your
well, copper. I think we get some in shellfish.
Absolutely.
We also legumes, whole grains, nuts, soy products.
Yep.
You know, things, you know, very, very healthy foods contain some amount of copper. So it's a matter of not overdoing. And again, this is nature's argument for variety in the diet. So not eating the same things over and over is a very good idea.
Yep.
Yeah.
Very good. So what's next?
Okay, what we've got a question from Judy. I'm 56 years old and have varicose veins, which cause my legs to ache sometimes. I wear compression stockings, which help. I'm on Coumadin for the past 7 years, and I'll be on it indefinitely due to pulmonary embolism and a DVT that I had.
Wow.
I'm now wondering if Venus Optimizer would be a good product for me to use, and for how long?
Yeah, the only question in my mind is, could any of the ingredients counteract the Coumadin? And I don't believe that it contains vitamin K, per se.
I don't think it has vitamin K.
It has butcher's broom in it. It has diosmin in it. It has some rutin in it. These are all bioflavonoids. It should be okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Venus, it's by a company called Gero, and we use it in our patients who have leg swelling. So that I think it also has horse chestnut in it. So it's a really great combo product for swollen veins. And I'm you know, when you are on Coumadin, you pretty quickly will notice the effects of one or another supplements you're introducing. So if you get monitored for your INR or your ProTime and you notice a change that's unexpected, then it is, you know, some people are more sensitive to certain ingredients than others. For example, some people react to coenzyme Q10 when they're on Coumadin. It actually has a vitamin K-like effect. It lowers their INR. It lowers their ProTime. It counteracts the Coumadin effect. And others don't, and it's unclear precisely why.
Hmm.
But it's probably genetic.
Yeah, possibly. Okay, Judy, best of luck. All right, our next question is from Jill. Dr. Hoffman, will you talk more about plantar fasciitis? I know you've suffered yourself in the past.
Right.
Treatments, are steroid injections necessary? Do you think splints are effective?
Yeah. Okay, well, let's reiterate. You know, I have to say that turning 60 was rough for me because I had, that year I actually won a triathlon. I never won a race in my life. And you know, partially because I turned 60, so I was in a new age category. I didn't win the race by any means. I was, you know, half an hour, 45 minutes behind the winner of the race. But because I was had just turned 60, I got to race in the 60 to 64 category, and I won, you know, amazingly. I actually got a little ribbon for it. Then things went downhill after that heroic effort. I started to get foot problems. And I have to say, they're completely gone now. I really am doing fine. But I developed plantar fasciitis, and to my horror, and the way I noticed this is I would have pain in my heels, and very characteristically, it'd be worse on getting up out of bed in the morning. You know, I'd get up and I'd, you know, pad off to the bathroom, and it was like I had pain in my heels, and it would dissipate through the day, but it was annoying. It wasn't debilitating. And so, you know, I went to the foot doctor dutifully, and the foot doctor said, well, you know, you self-diagnosed pretty well. You have plantar fasciitis. And I said, what do I do? And she said that conservative measures are usually the way to go. And I said, well, you know, should I stop walking? Should I stop running? Well, you know, take it easy a little bit, but there's not – many people are able to exercise moderately through it. She said – number one, stretch. You know, so I had to stretch my Achilles tendons. It's partially because your hamstrings and your Achilles tendons shorten, and it puts pressure and tension on your plantar fascia, which is the fascia that goes under your foot that joins your heels to your toes.
Uh-huh.
So then I bought some orthotics, and I think they were helpful. Had them custom made.
Did you have to have them customized?
I did have them custom made. You know, for some people that's a big expense because it's not covered by insurance.
It is, yeah.
But
yeah.
You know, you can obtain orthotics. I mean, they're not perfectly customized to your foot configuration, but they do seem to help. They cushion the foot. I also changed my shoes. I got, you know, wider, more comfortable shoes. you did the splints at night, which was annoying for a while because I would have to put this big booty on my foot, and it keeps your foot at 90-degree angle, which, you know, at first it's kind of like hard to sleep that way, but it keeps your foot from stretching in the wrong way. It kind of it flexes your ankle. Mm-hmm. And so I wore those for quite a while, like maybe 3 months, dutifully. I did not have to go to the next stage, which might have been a steroid injection. I don't really believe in steroid injections unless they're, you know, absolutely necessary, because they actually can weaken the plantar fascia, and you can actually have a rupture if your plantar fascia are weakened. So it didn't require that. I also used Toprosin foot cream, which is a product that is it's a natural cream that you rub in, and I really massaged in deeply while stretching my foot. I, you know, would sit in front of the TV, and I would just massage and stretch my foot, stretching that tense fascia. And you know,
Dr.
I think
Dr. Hoffman, did the melt method help you at all?
Thank you very much for prompting me. I also undertook something called the melt method, which involves using rollers, you know, like cylindrical rollers, to roll under muscles, you know, administering sort of a self-massage. But also it involves a set of three balls of various hardness and size that you roll under your feet. And that really, I think, made a difference. And to this day, I do it because I don't want this to come back. I'll have some downtime or idle time. I'll watch the news, and I'll roll these little balls under my feet, massaging my plantar fascia and my heel and my, you know, forefoot. And ultimately, that worked. So you can just go to meltmethod.com. It's I interviewed Sue Hitzman, the originator of this process, and it's something that you can find, take instruction at a local gym, or you can buy the book, or you can get a DVD and learn how to do it. And it doesn't take much equipment. You just need the balls, and you need a roller, and you could do it. You could do it at home on your own, or you could do it in classes. I know that the YMCA in New York offers classes in the Melt Method, and I sometimes I'll go for a refresher because just reminds me how to do the different manipulations correctly.
Terrific.
Yeah, so it, you know, all's well that ends well. I really encourage people to not get too aggressive about it. Don't consider injections, surgery. Sometimes they do extracorporeal shockwave therapy if you're really desperate. Each therapy works a little bit, but I think ultimately, it's a self-limited condition, and it will get better ultimately. It's just you have to kind of work through it.
That's
and now
great.
I'm back running, and, you know, it's not bothering me.
Terrific.
Yeah, so I really worried about that. I said, oh, my goodness, is my running career over? This disaster really depressed me for a while. But, I cross-trained. I got in the pool. The pool, it doesn't bother your feet. And, stayed in shape in other ways while I was resting my feet. And then now I'm able to go back to my usual activities.
Mm. Wow. Okay. We hope that helps you, Jill.
Oh, and I mentioned also that I took something called Wobenzyme. Lots of curcumin orally. Curcumin is great for tendons. And Wobenzyme, you take three capsules three times a day for injuries and inflammatory disorders. And I think that may have helped a lot. You know, when you do a million things, it's hard to tell which is the prime therapy that turned things around.
Probably a synergy.
I think so.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. We have a question from Eve, who's a retail pharmacist. She's bringing up a topic that you talked about on the air about Robitussin. Dr. Hoffman, yes. As a retail pharmacist retired from 35 years of hospital practice, my patients present with prescriptions for an antibiotic and the doctor's advice to take Mucinex DM or similar to treat their sinus infection, she writes in quotes. In my life, I hope to see antibiotics restricted in a manner similar to what we implemented in acute care in the early 1980s. Anyway, she does her best to dissuade them both from both, but it's obvious that they feel crummy and they believe these products will make them feel better. But Eve says, I do want to challenge your opinion that Robitussin is all bad.
Okay.
My experience, she says, and non-pharma education tells me that that particular product, is an effective mucolytic when taken every 4 hours with 8 ounces of water.
It's dextromethorphan.
Yeah.
Is the active ingredient. Yeah.
Yeah. Most of the patients quickly convert to a productive cough and reduce chest congestion. It's one of only the four medications I ever recommend when appropriate.
Okay.
You know.
Yeah.
And all of that.
Okay. I'd take it under advisement. I think that's from an experienced pharmacist. I mean, look, frankly, pharmacists often know better how people respond to these over-the-counter remedies than medical doctors who are so imbued with belief and admiration for pharmaceutical drugs that are by prescription. You can buy Robitussin over-the-counter, and maybe they just don't think it's hard-hitting enough, and so they disparage it.
Yeah.
And that's actually, I have to say that this, I'm quoting my pediatrics professor from about 1980, who said Robitussin is really great if you need to shine your brown shoes, just put it just get the bottle of Robitussin and get a napkin out and rub down your shoes. It's great for, it doesn't work for anything else. That's what he said, and it just stuck with me for 35 years.
Dr. Hoffman, are you familiar with the comedian Chris Rock?
Big time. Oh, I know that routine. Robitussin is good for everything.
Have you heard anything about Robitussin?
Oh, totally. Yeah, totally. Yeah, totally. I've heard that.
Just put some Robitussin on it.
It's like, gunshot wound, Robitussin. Break your arm, Robitussin. You know, right. So, you know, Robitussin, don't get no respect. I mean, even Chris Rock teed off against it. And, yeah, maybe what we like, of course, is if people have a cough, we suggest they take N-acetylcysteine. That is helpful.
Yeah.
It's a mucolytic agent. It actually works in a similar way to break up mucus. We know that that's the case because it's a glutathione precursor.
Mm-hmm.
So those are some of the things that we would recommend for that.
Yeah. Okay, Eve, thank you for your comment.
Yeah, we do appreciate it very much, and we don't, we look, as a pharmacist, we really respect where you're coming from.
Yeah.
All right, so we have time for one more question, please.
We have time for one more. We're coming back to the topic of magnesium from Louise in Scotland. She just had follow-up. She's still looking into if she can order from us and have it delivered to Scotland. She's still looking into that.
Uh-huh.
She asked, could I ask another question on the Q&A?
A wee bit of a question.
I'm interested in taking a magnesium supplement, and I've listened carefully to Dr. Hoffman explaining the different types, taurate, glycinate, citrate, etc. But can you tell me if magnesium sprays are any good?
Hmm.
I've seen them in the health food store, and I wonder if they're any good.
No, probably not. The idea being what you spray them in your mouth and they go sublingual or they go transdermal into your system.
Maybe transdermal.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I think I've heard of the transdermal. Do you think it works similarly to like Epsom salt baths or something?
It
works.
I haven't seen any good research on Epsom salt in terms of what it does to magnesium levels. But I got to say that. I've done the experiment of just a warm bath. You know, when I run out of the experiment happens when I run out of Epsom salts. I mean, it's it's sort of a serendipitous experiment. It's like I take a warm bath, and okay, that helps. But when I take a warm bath with a big hunk of, I put a full cup and a half of mag sulfate in there, which is Epsom salts. It really does relieve my aches and pains more.
That's wonderful.
I think there is probably some transdermal absorption of magnesium. Now, there's somebody who's making a magnesium oil or magnesium topical that I investigated briefly for a while. It didn't smell too good, and it was kind of hard to apply. And I'm not sure that has been demonstrated to be that well absorbed. But, maybe there's, there's certainly something to Epsom salt baths.
Mm-hmm.
Whether a magnesium spray works, I'm not sure.
Yeah. Louise, you know, I tell you, try it. I don't see the harm. Do you know,
Europeans are different in the way that they like to take supplements. Europeans like to take a lot of fizzy supplements. They're really into fizzy stuff. And so, you know, they don't like to swallow pills anymore. We're much more pill-oriented. And they like, you know, speedy Alka-Seltzer relief kind of products with, where they incorporate vitamins and minerals. And right. So a little different style in terms of, you know, certainly they have oral vitamins and supplements in pill and capsule form. But, yeah, I'm not sure that that's going to do the trick for you.
Okay. Best of luck, Louise. Go ahead and give it a try. Yeah.
Yep. Okay. And we'll come. That's one place I'd definitely like to visit. So I'll pay a house call one of these days, Louise. So great. All right. Well, that's okay. All the time we have for today's edition of Intelligent Medicine, the Q&A with Layla. And so send your questions to radioprogram@AOL.com. And even if there's a lag time, don't give up hope, because we're actually sometimes it may be 2 or 3 weeks before we get to your question, because we have a little bit of a backlog to clear. But we will eventually get to your question, and we answer them, as many of them as we can.
Yeah.
Thanks very much for joining us today, Layla.
Thank you, Dr. Hoffman.
And thanks for listening. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.